just for the hell of it, right? Faith in Parliament. Ha! Unpredictable as a grasshopper. Erasable as charcoal. Perishable as cheese. Vast as the space between two words.
Should have won a free punch.
That's not fair. All right. Crossing the I's that dot the T's, eyeing the crosses iced and greased, to cut the losses and oil the ease of unseemly toss beneath the trees, another who crossed and died unseen. That poem's called The Cops, but cops with E at the end, like a small word. And this next short poem appeared in your own Southward Journal, here in Cork. Like a baked head of garlic, my singing spills over, separates onto the hot surfaces of where I am now. Blue jays bundle and break apart again as if needing momentary nearness in mid-arc. A sack of old flesh, squeezing out tears now and again. Yes, this must be what is called a sentimental life. Even though I sort of hate doing this, not this, but I mean this one I'm about to do. This next poem is part of a long, sprawling urban poem originally written in Spanish. So I'm going to read the Spanish first and then my translation, which I hope catches fire and disappears forever after I read it. In the English version, I say a hash. And I'm just referring to a breakfast dish made with former day scraps, and in at least in Colombia, usually held together with egg. So here it is in Spanish. El día dura, no es cura. Prenda su bombillo taladín, que una herida en lluvia se esfuma en humo azul. Un calentao sin huevo corre por una acera y se cuña, se encharca. Un morado que se oxida, pelusa pestañina, botella verde. Ponga que estoy mosca, mancha peluda, ponga pipiripao, a ver navegar por achaques que pitos toca, que chocolate chiripa. Ponga una azucena anaranjada como escampadero. Here it is, somewhat mangled in English. The day makes more day, not darkness. Light its bulb, little Aladdin, so that a wound in the rain may dissipate in blue smoke. A leftover hash, no egg, runs along the sidewalk where she niches. She puddles. A bruise that is rusting. A fuzzy mass of mascara, a blue bottle buzzing. So put up. I'm poised as a fly, a hairy stain. So put up, nickel and dime. Let's see which alarms go off, what hot chocolate strike of luck, as she charts her way from hard knock to hard knock. So put up. Put up a giant orange lily to shelter her from the rain. All right, this is a poem, it's inevitable. This is a poem about family. Our blood in the pipes of the house. Dreams were the blood of the house, closing the fingers of a desperate hand around the spine, up to the elbows in the house, shaken out by the spine. We piped our fingers, bones, voices, blood out the open doorways and windows of the house, out the cracks in its lungs. I don't know if you know his work, but this is a poem in honor of an extraordinary poet from the United States who committed suicide a few days before his 33rd birthday by jumping off a ship into the Gulf of Mexico. In Hart Crane's house at the bottom of the sea, we sat politely drinking tea, we three, the drowned and I and he, and spoke of many things that buoyant men will never see. I could not rouse or upend myself or flee into the blue bends, though the drowned excused himself, left early, had something to attend to, and left me with Hart in all his sadness and his grief. Well, for survival's sake, if we didn't eat all his little cakes of seaweed, and then stroll beneath the coral trees. When we returned, he played for me every record at the bottom of the sea. I must have fallen down a well, along a tunnel, through a sleeve. And as I listened in Hart Crane's house at the bottom of the sea, the funnel of his Victrola became a shell for his belief. As if the former weren't this, these are a little weirder. These next two poems are from a series of poems where I tried to not be present and let reality talk for itself. And so sort of all hell breaks loose syntactically and stuff, but it's, what are you gonna do? The stone is dead, the window was left open. This is the tin I was saying, again on the pain cajoling, in the of but yes again summer. See, there was some history of angels on the wrapping paper, tire marks, roll, an oil drum that had known a child's limbs inside it, snouting the wind and closing its fingers into its palms. The knife is open and married to the air, the bare feet lifted and patted the dirt again. They were driven out of the clock tower of night. They were driven toward palaces. They were beaten when every pair of open palms became the wings of a fallen body. They became they said again they, when their hands became stamens and the road was covered with pollen. I saw them walking. I saw that each was a beggar. I tied my apron on, imagining a city of chess pieces as windowless buildings. I climbed the stairs and closed the yellow door behind me. I often see ghosts in summer. If I were to tell someone, they would look in my eyes, mimic my jaw, and laugh. I speak only with the angels rising from the wrapping paper. Hill, whether there was howling, the yellow lights came down the road in the darkness in each of our hands. A tree, its hymnal leaves opening, its tea and dirt, where the falling steps under the blue canopy muddled, night, and again, falling in steps. The great gathering of lights and the running figure pulling bullets from them, hoarding them in his empty trunk, holding them like seeds in the wet flesh of fruit. The light has fallen from my hand. My palms are up in the air and the breeze in the dark has fountained the hope that I am lost. My comrades have passed from me and become the moths upon the fabric, making holes in it for days to pass through each death. I would claim this cold. I would claim some reverence for the bullets like minnows in the night air. If only they had made a banquet of voices from their feast of light. In the silence, I walked toward them. I thought of their empty houses as trees that had grown impractical branches. This is like a composite poem. This poem started because I was shocked. I had formerly read the work of the writer Primo Levi, and I was shocked to find how Primo Levi killed himself. He killed himself, he was a survivor of Auschwitz, and he wrote these incredible books. Among them, The Periodic Table, he was a chemist, and also a book called The Drowned and the Saved, about the Auschwitz experiences, incredible books. But he killed himself, even though he railed against suicide for survivors, because there was always this tendency to want to punish themselves for having survived. But then when he finally killed himself, it was the ultimate act of punishment. He threw himself down a flight of stairs. So it could be the most painful possible. And I was just absolutely shocked by that. And in my weird imagination, that combined with two anecdotes that I heard about, respectively, Samuel Beckett and Alberto Giacometti. Samuel Beckett's mother in Fox Rock, apparently, was very worried about her young son because he had this tendency to climb up into a tree, go out on the highest limb, and throw his body out spread-eagled into the air, and then splat upon the ground because he was absolutely convinced that he was going to fly. And apparently he would repeat this again and again until he had to be sort of stopped. And Alberto Giacometti, was an incredible sculptor and painter. When he was a kid, his thing was to bury himself up to the neck in dirt. That only then did he feel calm and happy and at peace. So I wrote a story about a suicide of somebody who jumps out of a tree and into a well. Go figure. This is called His Nibs. Damn these two-page poems. Chiseled by buckets of water, the effigy soon became familiar. Luckily, the windlass used in the saint's assumption had been sturdy. By no means light, tender, but not diminutive, he was risen. Gone all effluvial then. Still, his trainers hung heavy with mud. Aches leading where? Lifted out pains where woes would cling. And then the wanting, requiring hurt to his self, his own. Lunacy of a waning sort. No kidding. I wish I lived in a tree. Painted in ash, X or cross, what you will. Branching out this locus, this coordinate from which he plummeted beak first into the well. Here's another example of those translations I hate. But this actually became, I was talking today, we were talking, I was talking with Paul about maybe it could be good if one translates oneself, maybe there could be some positive side to it. I haven't really found it yet, but I keep trying. So this is a poem. The idea was to try to write poems, one in Spanish and one in English, on the topic of thistle, you know, the plant, thistle. In Spanish it's cardo. So this one was originally written in Spanish, and then I translated it into English, and then I wasn't happy with the translation, so I added kind of like an addendum. So what I'm going to read you is the English translation, the original Spanish, it's really short, the original Spanish, and then the addendum in English, okay? thistle and arduous cowing, the refuge where I burn, long day of darts, dun-colored from bruising, how to bind it and not bleed it. I have tarried in finishing with it, since what I have weeded is coffered there. So here it is in Spanish. Cardo, un arduo acobardo, resguardo en el que ardo, largo día de dardos, de tantos morados pardo, cómo amarrarlo sin sangrarlo, tardo en acabarlo, ya que ahí guardo lo que escuardo. And we have this addendum, which I'm not sure what the hell it has to do with anything. Thistle, why we all waste, while we all we whistle, all we taste, haste of gristle, all a pile, why wall we while, all we while away in haste, why this will fall, all a whistle. All the waste. This is just about trying to fly. We metacarpus up, gristle at the groin between vaults. Black comes cupping, mingles, blank halt, slapped falling must consist of use of green sinew, holding the folded snap, its frantic pump to tug the corpus into the gust, feathers left between shingles, not singed, but rusted away. Our fingers fluster everything we've seen, dusting it as orange becomes redolent, however high our reach ranges its remembered angels. I live in a really particular place. Medellin, Colombia is a really particular place. But we don't have time to get into it. So, what I can tell you is that that's what this poem is about. This poem is about having to live there without you, whoever you are. When you were here, when you were here, the liquid air, substantial, perfumed vibrancy, blue jays fall through, squeaking the effort to push across soundings in the lush current of bougainvillea and fronds. Cement is not a lasting skin on which to anchor sensation. Practically rid of thought, already in so much movement. Intimacy, a yard of heaped strategies, refuse bloated with moisture, exposure and abandonment, picked over and broken, greeny and fragrant from incidental growth. And still, things go to the trouble of being sticky, of honeying, attractant, only partly scabbed over. Partial is a weakness for more noise. More drunken flowers, buzzing, hiving, coupling, to become forgetful. In such heaviness, nothing happens. The small nest was invisible before and after the orange truck swerved the soccer ball and crushed the old tree. Spills are simply coating. Hours sink into churning branches. Mountains seal and slide upward into the comfort of misuse and hemorrhaging. Muggy with regret and still budding, bloody, infantile in the stung shade, bent on damage, the nausea of bad dirt fallen on spasms, on impertinence, on kisses beneath plastic. Always a blanket, a deaf puddle, no more trembling. pieces of brick in the mud. And we're going to do one more. Are you clapping? This is only one more. Okay, this one needs a little bit of an intro, though. And I'm not sure I'm going to be able to do it, but I'm going to try to do it because what the hell. Have you ever come across, in a social situation, two people blindingly in love? But I mean, at that moment where they're like, it's like a binary star or something, you know? And it's kind of, and you blush and you look away and then you kind of look out of the corner of your eye and they're just, they don't know what to do with each other. You don't know what to do with them. They're in your house. You have to give them dinner and they keep looking at each other across the table and they're laughing and they're happy. And it's like, hello, best 5 minutes of your life. Okay? I have two friends like that, and a couple of years ago, they sort of showed up on my doorstep in December. And the thing in Colombia is, if somebody shows up on your doorstep in December, you have to let them in, and you have to give them food, and you have to, I mean, that's just the way it is, which was fine, of course, except for the whole blindingly in love thing. So she was somebody who I had known for a long time, and she kind of had... She's kind of a little bit, I hate to say this because someday she'll find out I say this. She's a little bit sour, you know what I mean? Like, I always felt like she doesn't really like me. And I don't normally have this thought about people. I normally don't care. But when somebody's like a little bit sour, you feel like, you could like me, you could like smile a little bit, you know, or whatever. Like, when we say hello, you don't have to have that look, you know. She was like that. She was that person all the time. And when she was with him and she arrived at my house, it was like this amazing person, you know. And she was smiling and she was hugging me and she was, I didn't know what to do with her. And he is this amazing poet. His name is Ricardo León Peña. Ricardo is a Colombian poet, lived his last 30 years in New York City, in the Lower East Side. Amazing cultural figure, had a lot to do with reviving poetry in New York in the Lower East Side, was part of the squatters movement, fought the mayor's office and successfully got a building away from them that today is called Umbrella House, and that they decided that it was his because he had spent so much time there fixing it and fighting for it. So really a heroic figure. However, those decades doing that had seriously affected his health. Okay? So when he showed up on my doorstep with her name was Tata. Tata Lopera. And Tata, you know, the sour, Tata was just so happy to be with him, and they were so in love. And what Ricardo would say to me is, she knows. I told her I'm sick. She knows. But she said, she's in anyway. So I said, right, great, whatever, you know, what would you like to eat? So they had that moment that night, which was just amazing for everybody involved. And he wanted me to go up to a poetry festival in January, and I remember I called him up and he couldn't come to the phone. And I talked to Tata and she said, no, he's very sick. And by March, he had passed away. And so there was just this little parenthesis in her life that was just ecstatic. And that affected me a great deal, so I wrote this. See what happens? You start to talk about love and stuff, and you're just, oh. Anyway, it's called A Little While. And you'll forgive me for the way I present it, okay? Love came rarely, or it didn't come at all. My solitude was like a vast and empty wall. And when the time came. Make my curtain call. There you were. Sometimes a dream lies just within your reach, and you know if you try, you can embrace it. I'm so lucky to have made your heart brim over. The memory of your laughter is like a palm upon my cheek. I know it hurts to breathe, my love. I know the road's been long. So lay your head down and let me lie beside you. Oh, thanks, you guys have been great.